Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 81. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. This episode, you've heard me before. I like to do like a little preamble for my guests.
Yep.
This one, I'm going to oversell this one before we even start. I know this is going to be a spectacular conversation. I've had the pleasure to hang out with you a few times. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about this is I want to understand the why you are the way you are. So this is going to give me all the knowledge I need. So please go ahead, name and who you are.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. My name is Jackson McDonough. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Upperly Careers. But beyond that, I'm just a proud, positive Calgarian.
And you can say that so matter-of-factly. And that positivity, dude, the first time that when you had me down to your office, I'm like, fuck, is this guy for real? Because it's such a unique energy that you have.
Yeah.
And it's infectious. And not blowing smoke up your ass. Every time I walk away from like hanging out with you, I'm just like, Jesus. It's just a different experience. So this is going to be spectacular because I'm going to actually figure out why that is. So this is going to be a very, very self-serving interview.
Well, it's exciting for me because, you know, you don't often talk about these things. You just kind of go up, lights turn on and you show up and you try to be who you are. But, you know, in watching your podcast and getting to understand the whys behind so many great Calgarians, it's an honor to be a part of that group and to be on today.
And the cool thing is you're so this is like a total fucking bromance before we start.
I love it.
You're so Calgary centric and so am I. And just all the moves you make are so focused around the city. So I think it's going to, you're another amazing voice in our city.
I appreciate that. I've, you know, been back for 2 years professionally, but everything I have, a lot of the reason I am the person I am is because of growing up in this city and getting to talk about it today is going to be really fun.
Okay, man. Let's roll. You've seen a few of these.
Yep.
Go back as far as we want to go and hopefully go back far because I want to hear it all. So take it back and then I'll drag you.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit about me. I grew up in a family of six. I'm the oldest of four siblings. We're a little bit of a unique story. And I don't think I really appreciated that till later on that, my three younger siblings and I are all a year apart in age. So we're super close. And, you know, typically you'll have maybe one or two siblings that are a year apart. Mm-hmm. But to have four, we were a monster crew. I mean, growing up here, we'd roll up to a McDonald's or something after school. And my parents had a license plate that read 4 under 4. One of their friends had gifted them that. Because you have four kids under 4 years old rolling out of that thing. And so I just think, what a chaotic environment, but ultimately an amazing one to grow up in.
When you guys were growing up, what was going on? Where'd you grow up in the city here?
Grew up in Southwest Calgary, Chinook Park area.
Yep.
Went to Chinook Park Elementary School for 6 years. And I actually went to 5 different schools in 5 years. It's kind of a weird story. In sixth grade, I was at elementary school at Chinook Park. And the next year we moved down to Austin, Texas. So this is the first time we went down there and kind of my introduction to that city, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little later. But it was 2008 and like the financial crisis had hit and both my parents had spent time in the US. And I think ultimately they wanted to kind of give us that experience too of being away. And so we went down. The dollar was par, so it was a good time to go. And we were just there for 1 year. And I'll tell you, it ignited my love for sports. I was a football guy growing up. And so now I'm in the mecca of football for seventh grade. And, you know, we had like 3,000 people at our games. Like there was announcers. There was all of this chaos. So I thrived. I loved it. I loved the kind of being able to be the unique one. And it was a really great experience for me. We moved back. Kind of sad because you make all these friends and you kind of get to the end where you've really built good friendships and then you got to move again. So came back and I went to Edge, the sports school here. Yeah. And I think my parents did that solely because I was expecting sports to be like so impactful. And we just don't have programs and do it the way they do it down in Texas. So
that sport thing.
Yeah.
Was it from a young age?
Yeah.
Like because your sport background is like deep.
Pretty deep, yeah. It was my dad was a football player growing up. He went to school in the States for football.
Okay.
He played a little bit of rugby as well. But, you know, I was really lucky. He was working, and he still made time to come and coach the football teams I was on here growing up. And so it was a really great way to start our relationship when, you know, you have somebody that's there for you all the time. And like a lot of the guys that grew up playing hockey here, you have those car rides home and it was just so fun. Sometimes you're crying your eyes out after a loss, but having him there to kind of be a coach, but also just, you know, make what was important to me important to him was pretty powerful.
Was it, did he just introduce you to mom and dad and introduce you to sport? Like everything? And you just kind of sunk your teeth into something?
I feel like I grew up with a little football in my hand. Like it always going to be happening, you know, playing catch. My mom loves to tell me that as a young guy, like maybe 4 or 5, I used to ask her to introduce me, like introduce me. And I'd come into the kitchen and she'd introduce me like I was some mega sports star or somebody. And I'd walk in and be all smiley. And, you know, it's funny to reflect on things like that and see a little bit of those characteristics were there the whole time.
Mm-hmm. So you get to Edge.
Yeah.
Your sport, and it's a sports school.
Yeah.
But you had this wild experience in the States that you're just like,
yeah,
you had 3,000 people watching these you as a youngster play.
Yeah, I remember showing up and they didn't have a football program, but they had a program called Flex. And so you'd kind of have coaches create a program that weren't affiliated with the school. And so while everyone went and did their sports, it was a lot of hockey. Mm-hmm. Then I would go and be like working out in the gym or like running a drill with like maybe a gym teacher that mm-hmm. was kind of facilitating. So it was different.
Yep.
And, you know, at that age, everybody is wanting to be kind of fitting in with the group, right? We all have no idea what we're doing. We all want to kind of feel like we're in. And I definitely was on the outside being a football guy to the hockey guys. So it was an interesting year. I ended up switching halfway through to golf because I saw the golf kids getting to go and golf for half the day. And I just thought that would be more fun than being in the gym by myself. And yep. So I had a great end of the year there, just playing golf and, mm-hmm. and going to school. And the next year went to El Boya for grade 9. So back closer to home, yep. didn't have to do the long bus ride mm-hmm. out every morning. And the following year, Western High School.
Down the street.
Yep, just down the street from here.
The bouncing around, have you always had the ability to kind of like just be a part of groups? You know, like right now I feel you can go anywhere, stand anywhere, and be very comfortable.
Yeah.
When you're growing up and bouncing around that much, was it a skill or did you have to figure it out?
I had to figure it out. And it started when I got to Texas as like this Canadian. You know, you're being asked what it's like to have a polar bear or like how do you live in an igloo? Like you kind of are just on the outside. And I always made inward roots, but it wasn't easy, right? Mm. I had to learn kind of how to overcome that. And you could feel really alone. You can feel intimidated. It can be really stressful. But because it was year after year, I started for sure to get better at that and to yeah. certainly be more comfortable, you know, being in a position where I'm coming into established friend groups or an established group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel very lucky that I got that experience growing up. But I still stay, you know, really loyal to my roots. Two yeah. of my best friends, three of my best friends in the world are the three kids that I grew up with since grade 1. Mm. And we're all in different places in the world, but it's pretty cool to have friends from basically day 1 mm-hmm. staying loyal and true. And it's something I really appreciate is I don't care how you met or who you are, or what you believe in. I love people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a skill that I've been able to appreciate and realize that maybe not everybody is like that, but it's just because that's how I grew up.
Mm-hmm. So when you get to Western,
yeah,
what grade is that?
10th grade.
Okay. So you're starting like high school at Western.
Yeah.
Things start happening now. Like, are you finding your stride? Are you playing football? Like where are you at?
Yeah. So this is where, football kind of started to become a little bit secondary to rugby for me. It's when I really first started playing rugby. At Western, our football program was, it was more like everybody plays, like we're just there to kind of participate and have a fun time. And I was I wanted to compete and win. And I used to get so frustrated all the time because we just, it was more like this was a fun experience for everyone mm-hmm. to have. And I think winning is pretty fun. So I remember a rugby coach was watching one of the games and just came up to me after and said, hey, you should consider playing rugby. And that really set me down an amazing path. I started playing that first year. I got to bring all my friends out. All of them were fresh to rugby too. And we had an amazing time. I think in 3 years at that school, we lost one game.
No way.
And it was a close game.
But isn't it crazy you remember like...
Oh yeah, dude, the glory days. No, but it was really fun. And all of a sudden I started to get introduced to other opportunities to represent Alberta. The first summer after I played rugby in a national competition. And then every summer playing Alberta, getting invited to travel. I got to go all over Europe, all over the US, playing in really competitive environments. And I just started to love that game more and more. And ultimately, it led to me going down to the University of San Diego on a rugby scholarship at a high school.
Your athleticism, was it a natural thing? Was it like DNA? Did you work at it? Was it something you just kind of honed over the years, or where does it come from?
Probably a little DNA. You know, I wasn't like a freak athlete by any means, but I definitely had the mindset of being a competitor and being aggressive and being a student of whatever game I was playing. So I think that kind of combination is what allowed me to have success in you know, sports as I was growing up.
That competitive fire.
Yeah.
Where does that get hatched? You know, is it being the oldest brother? Is it?
Maybe a little bit. I think, you know, I always just wanted to do something at the highest level I could do it. I never really liked to kind of test the waters and see if something would work out. If I made a decision, I was going to make it the right one. And I don't know if there was like a single kind of inspiration behind being competitive, but I loved to be at the top of whatever I was doing. And I put in a lot of work to do that.
So you get to San Diego.
Yeah.
It's a quick rise, right? To be introduced to the game in grade 10.
Yeah.
3 years later on a scholarship.
Yeah, it was, to the States. It was fascinating.
What were you playing? What position?
I played inside center.
Okay.
So for those unfamiliar with rugby, if you know football, it's kind of like a mix between a running back and I'd say like a linebacker. Yep. So because you're kind of playing all the time.
And yep.
I think that's another thing I liked about rugby. I didn't have to come off the field. In football, you have to, mm-hmm. you know, sit on the bench, hype your boys up. And mm-hmm. I like to be on the field all the time. So. Yep. San Diego was amazing. It was a completely different experience. First time I'm alone. Like, I don't know anyone going down there. And
it's sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of grew up around sports and I don't know if I know anybody that went on a rugby scholarship.
It was
the States.
Just like, it's at early, the time, right? When it was starting to happen. Right now they have a professional league in the US that wasn't established. Mm. And scholarship money in the US, I can't remember the NCAA rule, it's title something, but it was put in a long time ago so that men's and women's sports both receive the same amount of funding. Mm-hmm. So you've got football receiving a lot of funding, mm-hmm. right? There's no real women's counterpart to football. And so women's rugby actually became that and where a lot of the money would go.
Yep.
And men's rugby then didn't have its counterpart. So it wasn't even an NCAA sport for a long time. Hmm. And so it was just kind of pivot. It wasn't a full scholarship, but it was enough to kind of get me down there.
Yep.
And ultimately, I only lasted 8 months there before I got a call to come play with the Team Canada team in Europe. And I said, yeah, school can wait. Okay. Let's go do that.
This sounds awesome. So when you go to San Diego, how old are you then?
I would have been 18.
So pretty young.
Yeah.
So not legal, obviously, in the States. Yeah. What did that experience feel like?
It was amazing. You know, I didn't feel like I fit in with the demographic of that school. It's a private school. Like, you've got a lot of kids that grew up all over California with very successful parents. Mm-hmm. Like, the weekends they're jetting off to go to their house in Malibu and things, mm-hmm. and driving these crazy cars. And it was like a new world to me. I really loved having the rugby team that I was on, like, yeah. just as really good brothers at that school. And you know, there was a rugby house down on Mission Beach that I had a lot of fun at. And, you know, it was just like a crazy kind of pinch me experience. Mm-hmm. But it was what I wanted. I wanted to go down since I was a kid to play football in the States, mm-hmm. kind of follow that path that my dad had. And so now to kind of be carving my own lane down there was really cool. And what I always loved about American universities, and I think what drew me to it, was the tradition around it. And so it was really cool to be a part of a school that had that kind of tradition beyond just your education. You're having a real experience.
That the draw, you know, the idea to go play NCAA purely because your dad was down there, like, or did you have other, because that's an interesting thing at a young age to understand that's your goal, because not many kids have that.
Well, I mean, the goal was to be in the NFL at one point. Mm-hmm. And I think we all get to a point where we realize that goal might not be attainable or the one. And some people find that way later and they keep getting better and better. And then that goal actually becomes the reality.
Yeah.
And for me, it was just a really great opportunity to go down and continue playing a game I loved and do something different than others around me had done. I didn't know of many other Canadian kids going down to the States to play that sport. And so it was really cool to kind of have that as my story.
Mm-hmm. What were you taking? Did you know what, was school?
I think I was in international business there. And, you know, I always wanted to get a degree. I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. I have a lot of great people in my family that have influenced me. But I always wanted to get a degree, especially as the older brother with three coming up right behind me. I felt that I always had to kind of set the tone. And I always say the way I know I'm a good older brother is if my younger siblings are doing better than me. Mm. So that means I have to set the tone pretty high and encourage them to keep punching above the weight. And I think every single one of them are.
Was that a conscious decision? Because I'm the older brother too.
Yeah.
And my brother and sister will laugh at me if I said anything like that because they're like, fuck you.
Yeah, they'd probably say the same thing too. But that's a relationship you have as older brother. You're kind of like a parent sometimes. And especially in an age where we grew up so differently than our parents, right? Like social media arrived when I was in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And my parents, they could be as tuned in as possible, and they were like, they didn't have social media. Mm-hmm. Like it was like the wild, wild west back then. Like mm-hmm. there were no rules. There was no like internet safety was just becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was amazing to see that growing up with social media happening, if you were getting bullied or you weren't feeling like you fit in back in the day, you could go home and kind of get away from that. But now you're around it 24 hours all the time. You're getting left out of things digitally and it's affecting you all the time. So it's tough for me, it just made me a parent kind of older brother, but.
Like a protector older brother?
Always, maybe too protective, but it's funny because I know they'd all be laughing and calling me on my shit right now for sure, but that's just the role siblings play.
Totally keep you honest.
Oh yeah.
So the school piece, did you know like, you knew you wanted a degree when you went to San Diego, did you know what exactly you were gonna do then? Or were you just like
not
taking
really.
Basics?
Like I always thought entrepreneurial, being an entrepreneur or starting a business was kind of the path I would go down. My family in this city, I'm a fourth generation entrepreneur. So at every level that I know, there was somebody starting a business in my family line here. And so that was definitely a little bit natural and kind of the path I saw.
Yep.
But an opportunity to put the maple leaf on my chest. It was for the like U19 team over there, but it was still like, you're going to go over to Europe and play with the maple leaf on your chest. Yeah. School can wait.
So you finish your second semester and you get the call?
It was the end of my first semester.
Okay.
And so I kind of was like, got back for second semester and then was like, yeah, I'm going to go do this.
So pause on school.
Yeah.
And so you're going to go play at the U19 Canadian national team.
Yeah.
Is this like a touring team or what is it?
Yeah, we toured. We were in Romania, and so we played, I think, three games over there. Crazy experience, like to look back on. I mean, I had knew nothing about Romania, and it was. I think we were there. It wasn't warm. I remember that it was pretty cold, like very different than any place I'd ever been to. But to be around, you know, the top guys in your game and playing and getting to have some success there was such an unbelievable experience. But I realized for me that calling to come back to school, and I don't know if it was like a little bit of guilt for walking away from it, but at the end of that experience, I just realized, you know, I think this is as far as I can take this sport. And I feel like I'd accomplished some great things and I was hungry for more. And so I actually... a football coach from St. FX University who had offered me to go play football out of high school, stayed in touch and he just reached back out and said, hey, I see you're back. Would you want to come out and play football out here? And I thought, what a great way to end the rugby chapter and then go get my degree by playing football. And so I went out to Antigonish, Nova Scotia, never been there before. And there I am. Playing football, and I lasted about 2 weeks because the rugby team was practicing on the field every time we were, and I'm just looking over like, that looks a little more fun. I think I'm going to go over there. So I played football, got a job, and bartended through school, and got my degree, and the one thing I have to say about X is it had that tradition, and people call it a cult all the time. I'll leave that up for interpretation, but it does have that same tradition around the school. There's nothing else to do out there except for be involved and be a part of the school. Mm. And oh, I loved my time there.
All that bouncing around, like San Diego, go play rugby, come back, go to X.
Yeah.
Is it when you're in it?
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot to handle and like lots of moving pieces. When you're in it, did it feel like a natural flow, or were you just like young enough to just be like, whatever, this is fine?
Yeah, it kind of, as long as I just had something I was really fired up about, that's what I was doing. Mm. And so I don't think I even thought that this was a unique path to take. I just was having a lot of fun and, you know, trying to do my best at whatever I was doing. But yeah, it is a little bit of a different world, San Diego versus Annie Ganesh. I can say that.
So when you get to X, is the entrepreneurial thing on your brain? Like, are you trying to pick school based on that idea?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, school for me was something that I just wanted to get done. Like I really believed that getting my degree was then going to give me the opportunities to go get started and get exposed to something. I remember in my second year at X, I was a business student, and then you go through kind of, there's these presentations from all the different faculties, so you can choose your major. And entrepreneurship.
Nah, I got you.
That's the one. wow. Entrepreneurship was one of the majors you could take. And there was finance and all the other ones. I chose finance. And it was because I thought you can't be taught to be an entrepreneur. And I think I'm good. I got that. Mm-hmm. But I had nothing. I couldn't tell you anything about finance. And so I just thought I would be smarter as an entrepreneur if I took finance as my major. And I hated it. Like, I got through it. But, you know, everyone was going for their CFA in that major. And for me, it was just like, okay, I've got this finance degree. I don't want to go into finance after. But I got it done. Looking back, it probably would have been a good thing to go into entrepreneurship as a major, considering that it's a little more relevant. But that was my mindset going in.
When you were done with it,
yeah,
like that check the box idea, and I say it nonstop on the show of how much I couldn't do school, wasn't good at it, didn't like it.
Yeah,
that drive that you know you needed it. What was it like? Was it just like validation? Was it understanding how to learn? Like, what was it that you really?
Well, I think that was the model of success that a lot of us were shown. Like, you're successful if you get your degree. Right. That, I think a lot of people had that pressure on them, whether their parents had gotten a degree or not. Yeah. That was really viewed. It wasn't quite the time where, you know, there's different ways to learn. There's different pathways. Mm-hmm. There were, but they just weren't as mainstream, especially growing up. Like, you kind of think about, okay, you get a degree, you kind of have a family or buy a home by 30. Like, those were kind of the milestones that, for whatever reason, I think a lot of us thought were kind of the benchmarks. Yep. If you're looking at, you know, what your life looks like. Yep. And it's funny now to think that that's not the case.
You touched on it, like the pressure from mom and dad. Is there out of all, you know, the journey till now, is there any like strong suggestions on where to go, or are they just kind of supporting you at every turn?
So supportive. I never felt like over-pressured by them, but just so supported. And I'm very lucky to have had that. I recognize that, you know, I had a lot of luck in how I was raised and the love that I was shown and the support I was shown. And for me, it's really an internal drive to do right by that. Mm. I was given opportunities and I want to do something with those.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause, you know, to make that phone call or, you know, to tell your folks, hey, I'm done with school, I'm going to go play rugby.
Yeah.
It's an interesting conversation.
Well, you know, it was easier to make that argument because of the team I was going to play for. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think everybody has to have a call like that at some point. And for me, I was met with just full support and nothing but encouragement. Pretty lucky.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you finished university.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea of what you want to do, or are you kind of?
I was looking at coming back to Calgary, to start my career. But at that time, it was 2018. Calgary just had a little bit of a cloud over it. you know, it was known as this city of opportunity and abundance. And we were coming out of energy really being hit hard. A lot of people being laid off. We had just voted no on having the Olympics again. And I think tech and film and arts, while there was people doing those in our city, they weren't as all around you here or talked about. It was just, we were the one trick pony, oil and gas. And you had to know somebody to get a job. And I wanted to go to a city that felt like Calgary when my parents were choosing to come back to Calgary from their school. And I, you know, I had my experience in Austin, and so it was always on the radar. And at that time, all I was hearing was how exciting of a place to be. Young people are flocking there for different opportunities. Tech is on the rise there. And I wanted to figure out a way to be a part of it. And so as a Canadian, I had to figure that out because I needed to get a visa, and an entry-level visa isn't easy to come by. So I started interviewing at companies, and I would get pretty far, but then, you know, you're interviewing alongside Americans who, from a hiring manager perspective, it's a little bit easier to go down the hiring path. Yep. And because I was Canadian, it would be more work. So after like the third or fourth kind of getting to that later stage and being told that, I, instead of getting discouraged, I just went and built my own visa application and got it done so that the next interview I had with a really cool company down there, I just said from the start, as a Canadian, I want you to know the only extra work you're going to have to put in is sending this application to your legal team, and there's no extra work. So I hope you can treat me as just the same as anyone else. And that worked. So I got an opportunity, and off I went down to Austin, Texas to start my career.
What was the role?
It was entry-level sales for a software company called Medallia. They did customer experience software. So, you know, when you think about, let's say WestJet as an example, you have an experience as a customer, whether it's good or bad, there's a lot of different places you can leave that feedback online, on a call center, you can text, you can do a survey. Mm-hmm. And they came up with a software to centralize all of that feedback across the omni-channel so that decision makers in an organization at whatever level could pump the voice of their customer into the decisions that they were making. And it was a really cool experience to go through. I mean, you think about tech and you have those cool offices, there's dogs in the mm-hmm. office, there's all this food. And that was the experience I got. And it was pretty amazing. I was one of the younger people they hired at the time. And over the 3 years there, they went public. We went public on the New York Stock Exchange. So really cool to see kind of at a ground level how you get there, like all the leadership meetings and what you're being told at these all-hand meetings about the goal, then accomplishing the goal, and then how it changes after. It was a really cool experience for me to have as a young guy. And I started at entry level and worked my way up to a director there by the end.
It's so, it seems so obscure. You know, like
it doesn't make any sense.
Well, graduating out east and deciding that Austin's could potentially be a home base for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, like to want to be in the tech world, to start off as like a junior sales, like it just seems like it's a reach, you know. It's kind of random, but it's, you know, whatever was working in your head, it made a lot of sense at the time.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that there was a rhyme or reason other than I just wanted to have a fun experience. And I wasn't looking to anyone to kind of base that off of. I was just really kind of leaning into the little ideas that popped into my head and taking them as far as I could.
And those little ideas, have you always had those? And you still continue to have them?
Still continue to have, like all the time I have ideas. And it's... Some people will call it a blessing and a curse because you can really get really into one thing and then all of a sudden there's another new shiny thing you want to go after. But for me, looking back, and it's nice because I don't do this often. It's like a little weird to just be talking fully about my own experience.
I love it. Like I'm finally flipping the table.
I know. But for me, I feel really just like lucky and proud that, you know, those little ideas I turned into some pretty big things.
How do you think about those ideas? Is it intuition? Is it listening and seeing things and then taking those and shaping them into your own ideas? Or is it just trusting your gut when something appears, you're like, mm-hmm. you can digest it quickly and decide on something?
It's definitely trusting the gut and just going for it.
And it's so like cliche to say it, but there's something there. Like there's, you know, if you can really trust it and if it's good,
yeah,
it can take you a lot of places.
I agree. And I think I always just loved the feeling of doing something that was unique, like that somebody else hadn't done or was new. And, you know, I think the older brother aspect definitely played a role in having the moxie to go for those things because mm-hmm. I didn't have older siblings to kind of shape an experience off of. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, it was really just, I can go do whatever I think is possible. And so why shouldn't I?
Mm. It's reason I'm stuck on this one is because sometimes I think about like what I would do in the situations as I'm listening to it. I'm like, I don't think I would have the courage or interest to go like, I don't bounce around. Like I've been in Calgary my entire life, lived mm-hmm. in Toronto for like 11 months and that's it.
Right.
So the idea of like, listening to you as you hear what I'm jumping on, like you're bouncing San Diego, you're playing rugby, you're going to X, you're going to Austin, like all those little things.
Right.
It's kind of like concerning for me. I'm like, oh, that'd be awkward.
I actually think, you know, and what I know about you, Jeff, you're actually more similar maybe than different there. I mean, to have the moxie to go and build something like this show even, right?
Yeah.
Like where other people would be like, I don't know. There's always the doubters, right? Mm-hmm. You still did it. Mm-hmm. Whether when you went to Toronto, you still did it.
Yeah.
And then you still chose to come back. So I think those things are more similar than you might think.
Yeah. It's kind of that competitive nature too, right?
Yeah.
You're going to do something.
Yeah.
You just want to do it properly.
Absolutely.
And you want to do it at a level.
Yeah.
That's what this show is like. That's at the root of this show.
Yeah.
So after Austin, mm-hmm. did you, you know, it goes public, 3 years, you're a director, and then you come back here. So what does that transition look like from Austin to Calgary?
Like there was always, I always felt a natural calling back to Calgary. Like it's just such a great place with my roots. My family's here, my friends are here. And so I knew I was going to come back. And when I think about why I was going down to Austin, it was to have an experience and to see what a really exciting place is all about. And then maybe play a role in bringing that energy and that excitement back to my home.
Was that like a conscious thought?
Yeah, that was from the beginning going down there. Like I need to figure out what they're doing so well so that I can think of something to come back to Calgary and bring. And that was an aware thought that I spoke about very out loud to a lot of people when they were wondering why I was going down to Austin. So it was kind of cool. A little scary when I realized here I am 3 years later and that moment is kind of happening now. Like mm-hmm. it's time to, mm-hmm. to lean back into that. Mm-hmm. You know, I had an opportunity to stay down there and continue to go with that business. And I would have been great down there. I was at a really high level, but I was also a young dude with a little bit of money in my pocket that now I could go and start something at a time where the risk to reward is the most optimal it could probably ever be. Mm-hmm. I don't have a family mm-hmm. To consider. I'm just a single guy. I just have to do what's right for me and put myself in a situation to learn and get better and fail ultimately. So I remember thinking about joining, doing Upwardly, and it was just, why not? Like if it fails, I'd still be young enough mm-hmm. to go after and do anything I wanted to. So that was all the reason I needed.
Did Upwardly, and we'll get into what Upwardly is, obviously.
Yeah.
Did it start down? Did you hatch the, you know, year three down there? Are you thinking about what the out looks like? And are you trying to figure out what idea you have that you can bring back?
Well, I had the fortune of having my mom, Jill, who is an entrepreneur in her own right, who had built businesses before.
We're on this now, so you have to, she told me when I met her.
Yeah.
What was the business?
Which one?
The bagel shop.
Oh, Schwartzy's.
She told me that, dude, and I almost fell over. I was like, no way.
Yep.
That was like in my era, that was a massive.
It was booming.
Huge.
And, you know, she grew that business. My dad joined and they grew it together to a bunch of different locations. And she made the decision to sell it off and raise her kids. And thank God, because that's why I'm sitting here at this table right there. Mm-hmm. You know, that as a woman, I'm a man, so I can't understand that. But as a woman, to make that decision and put your career on the line and to stop it and to say, it's actually more important that I'm there for my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's different for every woman and there's no right or wrong decision, but I'm really proud that she made that one for me. And I know all my siblings would say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when she told me that, I was like,
yeah, they were rocking. They were rocking.
It's a certain generation that actually knows that name.
Yeah.
I don't like, and so, she, you know, and you got to be kind of born and raised here a little bit to really understand it.
Yeah.
But she told me that. I was like, no way. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I keep trying to tell her, let's do a pop-up. Like, let's just bring it back. Unbelievable. Over Stampede. Let's do a little trailer there and see how it would go. But, you know, that kind of influence is what I grew up around. And so when I was in Austin and my youngest sister was moving out of the house, I think Jill was ready to tap back into that entrepreneurial spirit. And so for, you know, over a year, we just had really cool conversations about different businesses and different ideas. And ultimately, Upwardly came from the endless news cycle we were getting out of Calgary of young people flocking from the city for the first time. Mm. Like young, there's never been a time when more young people are leaving than they're coming in.
Yeah.
And there were all these papers about it. Is it a real trend? There's studies going on. And we just believed that there's some kind of action that we could take. And that is where the roots of Upwardly really began. And what it turned into was a business model where we could advocate for the skills of young people to businesses to encourage more opportunities for them, but also help candidates and young people, new grads, understand what their skill set is and why the opportunity is here for them in this city. And we continued to evolve that as we went on. We launched in June 2021, and that demographic, Gen Z, that new generation entering the workplace, we built our model off of them. And we realized after having success placing them with our candidates or with our clients wanted us to hire for their entire teams. Mm. We were doing something right. And so we realized coming out of COVID that demographic that we built our business off of had a mindset that everyone in the workplace was transitioning to. Mm-hmm. You know, COVID gave us a little too much time mm-hmm. to think about how we want to work, what we want to do, what our why is. And we were the ones understanding that and giving people an opportunity to tell us their why before we even look at a resume. We have a saying at Upwardly, we like to illuminate instead of eliminate. And that's been one of the special factors that has allowed us to have success in this market and change the way companies are hiring for the better.
Which, and I can see it from the outside and it's like a different vibe going on. So
yeah.
It makes sense. Before we keep going down that path, I want to go back to that, those conversations with your mom when you're in Austin.
Yeah.
I find it fascinating that, you can actually have those conversations, you know, to actually have to want to work with family.
Yeah.
B, your mom to like either see something or trust that, you know, you have the energy to pull something off. So
right.
I find it very unique that those conversations were happening and then it actually plays out.
Well, it was so fun to have them for me. And when it started, it was really more just being a sounding board for her as she kind of figured out what her next phase was going to be. And I just had a great experience. And, you know, obviously working for 3 years in a pretty trendy area, I could bring a little bit of insight and guidance into that perspective. And, you know, we workshopped a lot of different things. And then ultimately, when we kind of came up with Upwardly, I didn't know that I was going to be involved in it. It was really more, this is something she could take and build and do. And I remember she had a conversation with me and just said, you know, we're ready to go, but it's not happening without you. And that is when it clicked, like, okay, like now I have a really serious decision to make. And it's kind of a funny story how I decided to make the decision to come back.
I'm glad you're getting into this.
Yeah, there you go. It's all the good stuff. You know, I remember just being really nervous. Like, I'm not going to let her down and not do this with her. But I had a pretty good thing going. Like, was I ready to make that jump? And it's silly, but I actually took a jump. I went skydiving and I was terrified of skydiving. And I don't know what or how this happened, certainly happenstance. I was out one night with friends in Austin and one of my really good friends just said, hey, I've got an open spot to go skydiving tomorrow morning. Like, should we go? Meanwhile, I'm dealing with a little bit of anxiety and stress of leaving my friends, making this big jump. Like, there was a lot of pressure on my shoulders. And am I going to make this decision to go or stay here? Like, I don't know. And so we're out. I say, hell yeah. I get up the morning. I'm like, what have I done? Here we go. And, you know, absolutely terrified getting up there and jumping. And as soon as I jumped, like, I just had the biggest smile. And by the time I landed and my feet touched the ground, I was more confident than ever that we were going to start upwardly and we were going to do some good things.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy experience.
And like all of it, like the timing of it all and just
wild. But it's, you know, those are the things that life continues to do as it delights. And when you have those little moments of, whoa, is that a coincidence? You know, I don't know if it is or if it's something beyond that. But for me, I never stopped listening to those things. And I just allow that to show up in my life every single day.
Is that how you deal with it and think about it?
I do.
Because I find this like fascinating, right? When these circumstances just start showing up.
Yeah.
And then you have to either be, you have to be open to the idea of receiving them.
Yep.
And then being able to make a decision.
Yeah, it's meant to be, you know, it's meant to be.
But it's hard to, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. Some people might listen to us and be like, those idiots. Are like, they're talking about nothing. Why is that, you think? Like, why is that, you know, you and I can believe in that same idea. And some people either just haven't had those experiences to even know that that's possible. That's where I get confused sometimes.
And for me, I have a strong belief that everyone's experience is different. And there's no sense in trying to put your perspective or your vision in front of or over top of anyone else's. And so for me, there's no reason to kind of explain what I believe in and almost like you're missing out, because I feel like there's people that have experienced different things than me that would think I was missing out on the way they're thinking. And so, you know, for me, that's what I believe in. And it's been pretty fascinating to see how many times that's shown up in my life where, you know, you're just putting energy out there to make something happen. Some people call it manifesting.
Yeah.
And for me, that's just kind of how I go.
And do you find with your energy level, you know, if you're on a bit of a down, do you find there's less of those opportunities that show up?
Yeah, you know, I came up with a really good analogy for that, and I've helped a lot for myself understand this. There's ups and downs all the time in life. And I realized that every time I'm feeling down, I allow myself to feel down. It's important to feel that. But I got away from asking why or wondering why, and I came up with an analogy of a rubber band. And similar to when you pull a rubber band back, there's a lot of tension. There's a lot of stress on that rubber band, and you can be feeling like the most spread out and crazy like you've never felt before. But every time you pull that elastic band back and let it go, it flies forward into something. And so now when I'm feeling those downs, I know it's because it's right before something good and something great is happening, and I'm launching myself towards that. And it's helped me appreciate being down and being okay with being down, because it means, you know, I'm putting pressure on myself. I'm trying something, and I love to launch those rubber bands forward.
How do you like I said at the start of the show, we've talked a few times, and I hear these things. I hear how you think. I'm like, that. Where do you come up with that?
I don't know.
Why do you even like have to come up with a scenario that kind of helps you explain it? I'm not saying it's weird. I'm just saying to even think that you need to give it some thought, and then here it is, and it makes sense.
You know, a question I'll always ask myself. I don't think I'll ever fully understand it, but I'm good with it.
Yeah.
Like it makes sense to me, and that's how I operate.
Mm-hmm. Which is that's how I operate. It gives you, it's like being able to know that gives you confidence, right?
Yeah,
You can maneuver and make decisions and just know this is who I am.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? Have you always, is that like through and through? Is that sport? Is that like family? Where is that?
Oh, I think a lot of life experience, and like, I didn't always have that. I struggled a lot with wondering why I was the way I was, or, you know, why does this bother me, or why does this bug me, or why, you know, that was growing up. But especially being in Austin and coming back, those things started to make more sense. And You know, I have conversations with friends that are going through things. And when we're kind of looking back, I start to realize that the things I used to wonder, why am I like that, are like, those are the same traits I have today. Mm-hmm. And while I didn't understand them back then, mm-hmm. now I do. Mm-hmm. And at every stage of my life, those things that define who I am have been there.
Yep.
I just wasn't as comfortable with them.
Mm-hmm.
And now I am. And I'm leaning in fully to that and allowing what shows up to show up.
And that, like, you know, you have all these experiences get you to where you are right now.
Yeah.
Now you understand yourself. And now when you lean all in, what starts to happen?
Big things start to happen. You know, I mean, upwardly, I'm sure we'll talk about, but even Beacons of Hope, which is an event I started alongside my grandfather last year for the Calgary Police Service to lift their spirits. Like, the imposter syndrome is real. You know, when you're sitting beside the chief and the mayor and we're talking about this event, like, I have moments. This 2 weeks ago, I was at the Reg Ball. And I'm like, what, you know, how am I in this position right now? How did I end up having to take this on? And those are the things that...
It's a fair question, though.
It is. I'm a young guy, right? Mm-hmm. And taking those big things on, I love doing them. And I'm getting more comfortable with just realizing that when I go for something, that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not easy, right? It's not... You can make it look easy, yeah. But it's not always so.
Mm-hmm. That pressure and nerves you felt when your mom's like, hey, you know, this isn't happening without you.
Yeah.
Is that the same? Have you felt that pressure before? Is that like when you're about to do something, do you always feel that kind of pressure?
Yeah. I think sometimes it's really natural to wonder why you're doing what you're doing, but you know, like that rubber band example, trusting the process and, And I think truly for me, and I'm still discovering this, is ensuring that you're doing something that you believe in and nothing else matters. If you believe in that, don't let anyone else change your perspective or add extra pressure to you. You can do great things by just believing that what you're doing is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the only things I want to align myself with. I think when it comes to public speaking, naturally, I was always able to do it,
yeah.
But you know, put me back in Annie Ganesh presenting about a finance project, and it was really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But once I started only speaking about things I truly believed in, then it came much more naturally.
Dude, I make the exact same way.
Yeah,
like I'm like the exact same way.
It's like there's no skill other than just saying what you believe in,
yeah.
Right? And when you kind of have to say something you don't believe in or aren't like fully just fired up on, then you start to stutter,
yeah, totally.
You start to back up. Yeah, it gets scary. But that's really been for me, putting myself in positions with a lot of pressure. I'm doing something I believe in,
yeah.
So I can handle that pressure.
Is that how you're kind of picking and choosing what you get involved with? Like, you have to believe in this.
For sure. And then
you're willing to accept the pressure and then...
For sure. Right now, like the bandwidth I have right now is to only do things I believe in and to continue doing them. My grandfather, Murray, who I started the Beacons of Hope with, he told me from a young age, and it resonates more to me now than it ever did before. But he said, and it was something that changed his perspective on being in business and transitioning into philanthropy. When you're around someone and they say, somebody should do something about that, recognize that you are somebody and do something about that. And what a powerful statement to hear and to feel.
How young were you?
I would have been 13, 12.
And then
you hear it again, like every year, all of that. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of seeing him speak at charity events or recently he's been getting a lot of great recognition and well-deserved for a lot of the philanthropic work he's been doing in the community. And it's something he says, and I just feel it right in my core. Like that's such a great perspective to have. And I know that it'll continue to line me up in front of things that will be really good.
That you're kind of making moves based on feeling.
Yeah.
It's kind of vague, right? It's kind of, there's no real like, okay. Do you have a 5-year plan?
No.
Which is, I'm glad you said no.
Yeah.
Because I feel, and me neither, man. I'm not making.
Yeah.
I don't have one. I don't have one either.
Yeah.
But when you're making moves by feel, I feel like it's tough to look that far out.
I mean, I have a mindset of where I'd want to be. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you what I'm going to be doing or where I'm going to be or what it's going to look like, but I know how I want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very similar to what I'm feeling right now. I want to feel happy. I want to have great people around me, and I want to be doing things that I believe in.
Yeah.
And whatever that looks like, we'll see. But if that's the mindset I'm in 5 years, that I'd be so happy.
And do you think you're able to do that because you understand your why?
I think so. I think I have the fortune of being a little more self-aware at a younger age than typically people get to.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, I'm the first one to say, like, I just want to take every advantage or opportunity I've been given in my life and do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not just for me, but for others, and to bring up others around me with that. And I'm very proud that that's something I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I hope that that's what I'm doing in 5 years too.
Knowing that that's what you like doing, knowing that what upwardly is,
yeah,
is essentially that just on steroids, because you're affecting so many people.
Yeah.
Did you always know that? Was that in you, like in university? Was it in you starting to show up in Austin? Did it not show up till you and your mom started talking about your...
I think so. I mean, I was raised... So my dad's dad, my granddad, Terry McDonough, he passed away 6 years ago. Unbelievable man. And he was a man not of all this money, successful businessman. I didn't realize it until his funeral. And I got to speak at that funeral on behalf of his grandkids. This dude took me everywhere as a kid. Like, everywhere we went, I was brought along, introduced me to everyone. And at his funeral, there was so many people at the McInnes and Holloway on Elbow there that they had two rooms filled and the doors open. And every single person in that room thought Terry was their best friend.
Mm.
And talk about leaving an impact. There are people that can leave it through philanthropy or, you know, through creating a new product or starting a new business. This dude's impact was how he made other people feel and was there for them and showed up. And so I had that influence to drive me and to feel like that is the exact kind of person I want to be. And then on the other side with Murray, my grandfather, like going out and starting the Field of Crosses here in Calgary, which is now one of the largest ways that Canadians can show appreciation for our veterans and fallen soldiers. Like, just to go out of your way and start doing that change in the community, I think that right now both of those guys would be pretty proud of me, but it's because of those are the shoes that I feel like I have to fill and I'll continue to fill.
Is there pressure there?
There's pressure, but it's good pressure.
Yeah, but right? It's like you're...
It's really good pressure, and realizing that for me, I really feel successful when I can help somebody and change a life or improve somebody's life. And for a while there, like, I was giving so much to my friends and to other people that I wasn't giving enough room for myself. But I realized that the way I fill up my tank is by really helping and being there for someone. And so how can I introduce more of that into my life in a way that I can manage, but also, you know, just continue to do good things.
Mm-hmm. And like, when you start thinking about those things, do you actually like, can you actually map ideas out, or do you just start thinking about them and then opportunities start showing up?
Yeah, I think they just start showing up. You know, it started with when we started Upwardly. One of the first things we did, the mayoral election was going on, and so here we are introducing this new business, and we felt that a great way to kind of show that we are here to advocate for young professionals and young people was to invite the top four candidates individually to Upwardly for a happy hour and allow them to hear the perspective and voice of young professionals in this city, so that, you know, young people could have their voice being shared with leadership in the community, but also the leaders that are running to lead this city could hear what was on the minds of young people. And those events were incredible. Even the candidates, all four, we had Jody, we had Jeff Davison, Jeremy Farkas, and Brad Field. All of them were blown away by kind of the uniqueness of that event. Mm-hmm. We called it a happy hour. It wasn't get dressed up and go to a mayoral forum.
Yeah.
We partnered with local breweries had them come in and we had drinks, and it was just a very powerful experience. But building on that, it turned into having a conversation about what makes Calgary great. And we realized it's, you know, the kindness, the volunteerism, maverick mentality. We like to take big things on and find a way to get them done. But if we peel that back, what allows those traits to shine through for Calgarians? And like, we live in a pretty big city and we can live safely and securely. And so there's a lot of people that go to work every day in this city, thousands, that show up to serve their community to keep it safe and secure. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it be the Calgary thing to do to just say, hey, thank you, I appreciate you, for the first time? Like, there was no opportunity to really do that. So that's how Beacons of Hope came to be. Mm-hmm. But to go back to your question, it's, you know, these things just spiral and snowball into something, and you just gotta roll with it.
You just, dude, I agree with you, like, through and through. It's just sometimes, you know, I haven't got to the same spot as you, like, not asking the why. I still ask myself why, like,
yeah.
But it's an interesting way to grow and scale. It's just like trusting, and I don't like to say trusting the process because it's so cliche, but you just like trust the direction and energy that you're receiving, that it's going to turn into something.
Yeah. Like, if you believe it's the right thing to do, do it. Mm-hmm. And then just stop there. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, you don't have to ask yourself any more than, is this the right thing to do? And if the answer is yes, then go for it.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to get in with you is, your passion, dedication for the city.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like born, raised, everything I started is like, has a Calgary name to it. Calgary Soul, Calgary Sessions. It's like, I'm all about this place. Mm-hmm. And talking to you and hanging out, like, a lot of the moves you make is Calgary centric. You know, it's all about this community. Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, from living here and growing up and wanting to give back to the place that gave me so much. And I had so many opportunities with school, with friends. The every path I went down was because of what was here, and recognizing that that's something that's evolved over generations, like, of Calgarians doing really big things to create a city that I grew up in and loved.
Yep.
So I feel like it's the right thing to do now as a young Calgarian that's chosen this city as my home, to continue to lift it up. It feels like the Calgary thing to do. And I'm sure there's people like that in every single city. But for us, like, I think that's just a very unique thing about this city, is that we bring our community together to lift our community up. I mean, I think that's basically almost word for word what the Stampede is all about.
Yep.
And so it's just in the bloodlines of Calgary. And you don't have to have grown up here to be a Calgarian and feel and live by that energy.
The one thing I did want to ask you, I've kind of missed it, that jump story.
Yeah.
You know, before you started telling it, you're like laughing. You're like, this is so ridiculous.
It's crazy.
But it's going to be that story, I feel like, in 30 years from now. That's just, you know, it's going to be, it's like the story. I find it. Do you give it much thought? I know you laugh about it, but do you actually ever catch yourself be like,
holy. I do. I think it was a very transformative experience to go through, where I'm kind of coming out of being like just like into adulthood almost. Mm. Like, it was a very defining moment, and I was lucky enough to have it on video. And I think I posted that video on my LinkedIn, because when I landed, I just felt so motivated and inspired. Like, everything clicked. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty great experience to have. And in the video, I'll have to watch it again. I haven't watched it in a while. But like, you see like the fear on my face as the guy opens the door.
He's gotta be like,
and you're just looking down at like the ground, like, it's insane. And these aren't like really welcoming airplanes that you're getting into. Like, this is like a little dinky plane.
It's a tin can.
Yeah. And the door opens up and you're like, holy shit, here we go. And in the video, you can see, like, as soon as we go, we like do one roll, and then I just have the biggest smile on my face. It's like done. Immediately. And that was my biggest fear. Like, I had a huge fear of heights, and there was no way I would ever jump out of a plane. But to see that smile come out right there was pretty cool. And I loved it. I haven't done it again.
One and done.
Well, maybe. We'll see.
Upwardly. Mm-hmm. So the path right now is, you can explain what it is, but Have you been able to figure out what your interest, what your passions are, all in a city that you love? Like, it seems like this perfect melting pot of all these interests, and you get to work with family.
Yeah.
Where's this thing? Like, what's it gonna do?
Well, you know, I think it's been amazing, the people, the team we have, to surround myself with them that are all bought in on the same vision of, it feels really good to go to work today and get to make the call of helping somebody find the career of their dreams or a job that they are really needing and looking for. It's a good feeling. And what we set out to do with Upwardly was take an industry that's been there forever. You know, like, recruitment is a very established traditional industry, and there are really massive companies that are super successful and help people find jobs all the time. But I started to realize that when you say recruiter or recruitment agency, a lot of people get a little shiver down the back of their spine. You know, they've been burnt by recruiters before. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody's reached out to them and left them in a black hole, or a company, a hiring manager, has realized, like, what are we paying these crazy fees for when it's just somebody sending me a resume and then moving along? So there was an opportunity to create a better relationship there amongst a recruiter, candidates, and clients. And that's what we set out to do. Let's use tech, but bring human and authenticity back into this process. We're not going to change the world with Upwardly, but we are going to change a lot of lives. And to this day, we'll be 2 years old in June.
No way.
Which is wild. It feels like 10 years. It feels like a week sometimes.
It's only two.
Yeah, it'll be 2 years old.
It seems like, so for me from the outside,
yeah,
we say that out loud, and I start thinking about all the community engagements that you're part of, you know, the events you speak at, like, and.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of damage in a short amount of time.
I mean, it's something that I have to remind myself of, because as an entrepreneur and as a business owner, you're always wanting more. Yeah. You're always thinking about, okay, like, we need more, we need to go, like, it's never enough. And so I try to stop and smell the roses every once in a while. Mm. And, you know, something like a 2 year anniversary is a good time to kind of look back and say, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, if I knew this is where we'd be, I'd be pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was a good moment. Let's get back to wanting more. And that's I think, an entrepreneurial trait that a lot of the people that do amazing things have.
Yeah.
The ability to stop and smell the roses, but to still drive forward.
Do you know what the more is? Is it like, do you have a statement that you roll by? You know, like,
you know, for me, I think about it and it evolves. I think the best part about being an entrepreneur and a part of a startup is that you can be agile and adjust. And we certainly have the team and the means to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the more for me is that the people that are a part of my team are successful and feel accomplished and can have great careers by doing this with me.
Yeah.
And also that we continue to create amazing value in a space that is underappreciated. The recruitment industry is so important in connecting people to careers.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to be the best ones at doing what we do. We don't need to be the biggest. We need to be the best. And to this day, I feel like we are. We have filled every single role we've taken on, our clients 100% retention, and we just continue to grow and grow and grow. And it's a pretty amazing feeling to see that growth. But even more fun to just show up to work every day and be around amazing people.
That growth piece, this is a selfish question. And I think it's also interesting for people that are entrepreneurs or thinking about starting their business.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a couple ways to go about it. You can go out and like sell.
Yep.
You can literally walk around or call or whatever it is and ask for something, right? Hey, do you need something?
Yep.
There's that approach, which I don't think you do. The other approach of like, you know, for me, I say build a brand, be a part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's more of what I've been watching you do.
Yeah, I agree.
It works, doesn't it?
It does work. It does work. I think creating value is the number one key to success. If you are creating value, especially when it's easier to perceive what that value is, for us, you know, working with you, are going to be telling a lot of the stories for the first time now that we're 2 years old. Mm-hmm. We realized we've been going out and advocating for our value, and that's how we bring businesses in, through referrals and through selling and calling.
Yep.
But we also have a lot of people whose lives we've changed. We have a lot of businesses that are our biggest advocates. And so getting to have them share those stories, like, yeah. It's a powerful experience, mm-hmm. just to sit there and watch those videos of, you had a vision when you started out your business, and to see it actually mm-hmm. changing lives is, wow, it's pretty cool.
Gets way different.
Yeah, it gets real.
And I feel like that community piece, like for me, so again, me watching from the outside, me watching you speak at these different gigs, watching the events that you're leading up, or, you know, co-founding, whatever word you want to use, it just gets you out there. People get to hear you. They yep. get to see you. They get to understand what makes you tick.
Yeah.
That, I feel like, creates inbound traffic.
I agree.
Just like general interest, like, who is this guy? What does he do? And that kind of momentum, I think, is a very interesting way to start how to keep growing your business.
I agree. And I'm excited that I've been able to have so many opportunities to mm-hmm. get engaged. And I think that's a testament to this city. I don't know that if I started this business in any other city, that the opportunities to get involved and to speak and to share and to be heard mm-hmm. And to want to be engaged with, that's like a very strong thing that our city has. We mm-hmm. love to support really cool and innovative ideas. And we love to get involved and mm-hmm. we're curious. Mm-hmm. Like, Calgarians are curious about what's going on. Ultimately, we're proud, and I'm proud to have started my business here. I don't know that it would have been the same. Actually, I can certainly say I do know it wouldn't have been the mm-hmm. same if I didn't start it in Calgary.
Yeah, which is the perfect segue. You know how I end these things. This has been a cool one for me because I like listening to business owners and what makes them tick and how they make their moves.
Right.
And listening to you just talk about, like, you know, the gut piece of it, and just like understanding all the experiences that kind of led you to this point, that kind of gives you confidence to keep going. Like, mm-hmm. it's all these soft things that I don't think get a lot of airtime in many places. Definitely not in school.
Fair enough. Yeah, I agree.
So that's why these are really fun. That's why I knew this one would be really cool for me, because I wanted to know what makes you tick, because the energy sphere around you is very different. And that's why I wanted to be selfish on this one and, like, figure out what's the magic sauce. So that's where the questions were coming from today.
Well, I loved it. And I think I told you that's how I met you. I reached out and just said, I listen to this show and I love what you're doing and how you do it and the stories you tell. One thing we all know as Calgarians, we all think that we need to do a better job telling the stories that are here in this city. And you are here doing that with incredible Calgarians of all walks of life mm-hmm. doing very incredible things that are so unique. Like, it's not everybody has the same incredible thing they're doing. And I just am so proud to be on this show right now and to have had this conversation with you. Kind of feels a little bit therapeutic sometimes being able to talk through a lot of these things. And it's a testament to you, Jeff, like, putting this show on and making this happen.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. I knew you were going to be awesome. So thank you. I end it with, when I say Calgary, where's your head go? And you've touched on a few things, but go.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
Number one, you know, home for sure. And all the other cliches, but opportunity. And I can leave it at that. I think everybody knows what that means. You know, whatever you want to do, you can do it in Calgary. And if there's something new that's never been done before, you can also do it in Calgary. Mm-hmm. So opportunity, 100%. It's an exciting place to be. I love it. I don't love the winter, but I love everything else about it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Calgary, a city of opportunity.
And like you said earlier, and I agree with you, I couldn't do what I'm doing in any other city.
Yeah.
This is nonsense, right? To sit, to have this show, to bring in all these random characters. The only way that I could do this is in this city.
Isn't it amazing what's going on in this city? Like all of the incredible things that different people are doing. It's just amazing. And this is a pretty good place. If you don't know where to look for those stories, listen to this podcast and you'll have, what, 81 of them now?
Yeah, 81.
There you go.
Thanks for your time, dude.
Thank you. Thank you, man.
I know you're coming off of back-to-back, so I appreciate it.
Let's keep it rolling.
Yeah,
thanks,
man.
Jeff.
Thank you.